Welcome to Crime Most French, a fortnightly podcast covering intriguing cases carried out on French soil. Researched and narrated by Cedric and rudely interrupted by me, Melanie. We're the true crime podcast, Old Alliance. Crack open, Le Vin, and let the mayhem commence.
This is episode 91, The Cécile Combette Affair. On the 16th of April 1847, the body of a young woman, Cécile Combette, is found against the wall of a cemetery joining a monastery in Toulouse. Nobody knows what happened. At 5 a.m. on the 16th of April 1847, an undertaker called Pierre Rasfaux, aka La Fatigue, the tired one.
I was going to say, is he tired? Is
yeah, it? I don't know why he's called La Fatigue. Goes to the cemetery next door to a monastery in Toulouse. That's where he works. He's supposed to exhume the Azam children on order from the police.
He's digging up bodies.
Yeah, kid's grave.
Oh, that's what you call a fun day at the office, isn't it? Oh, yeah. Gosh.
As the police was late, he started work by unseating the tombstone. But he wasn't allowed to do any more than that because the police had to be there to keep an eye on things.
Yeah.
The mother and a woodworker who was bringing a container for the bones, a coffin of some kind.
Right.
Probably a box, like a very cheap pine box, I suspect, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Arrived a bit after him. But they were informed that the judge wouldn't be able to make it on that day. So it was decided to delay until the next morning.
Oh, so they all got out of their beds early for some hoity-toity judge to put the kibosh on things.
I'm sure they had a good reason, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Until then, they had to store the box, obviously,
somewhere
so that it wouldn't get damaged by the humidity of the night. They can't just leave it in the cemetery.
Mm.
So they decided to store it in a small chapel that was sitting against a wall that was separating the cemetery from the monastery's garden.
You're right, okay.
The undertaker stayed at the door with the woodworker when the woodworker went in with the coffin because it was a very small chapel. You don't want to have too many people in there.
No.
But as he turned to look into the garden, the monastery's garden, he noticed something that was a bit unexpected. There was something that looked like a young woman that was crouching against the border wall in the distance, but wasn't moving.
Mm.
He first thought that she was either sleeping or having a pee, as you do in a cemetery, apparently. But getting closer, he noticed that the woman, in fact a girl, was on her knees, her face against the ground. He knew straight away that she was dead.
So was she in the fetal position or something?
She was, from a distance, it looked like she was crouching. But when he got closer, he realized that she was actually on her knees.
Right.
And her face was on the floor in front of her.
Okay.
To be sure, he pushed her by the shoulder,
but
he got no reaction. He noticed that the shoes had a layer of mud and a bit of straw that didn't look related to walking in a street along the cemetery.
It's more of a rural thing.
So, yeah, he wasn't too sure how she ended up there. Not knowing what to do, he called the monks from the monastery next door, who came to investigate. Get fair, obviously.
Yes.
One of them then went to call the police, who came fairly quickly. They were followed at 8 a.m. Remember, all that happens at around 5 a.m.
No, no.
They were followed at 8 a.m. by the local instructing judge, a police commissioner, and various other officials. Obviously, they all decided that a young girl killed next to a monastery wasn't very good, so it had to be investigated fast.
Yeah. I wonder if it was a different judge from the judge who was coming for the other.
Yeah, because that's an instructing judge, so most likely, yes, it would be.
Okay, a different judge.
The judge who ordered the graves to be exhumed would have been probably a trial judge.
Right.
That's probably a result as a trial. Most likely the kids were murdered, I'm guessing.
Okay, so we've left one judge in bed, but we've dragged another judge out of his bed.
Yes.
Mm.
It was easy to identify the girl. She was known in the monastery because she was working around town, and one of her recent jobs, in fact, the previous morning, had been to deliver books to the monks in the in the monastery after it had been rebound by her employer. Her father, Bernard Combet, was called and he confirmed the identification.
All right, okay.
So everybody knew the girl, apart from the undertaker, obviously, because he had nothing to do with her. He had no reason to know who she was.
Now, there's a real dying art for you, isn't it? Rebinding books.
Yes. The first question was to find out how the body ended up there, obviously. Did someone throw the body above the wall from the street, for example, during the night? Did someone simply come into the garden or the cemetery by a door left unlocked? Or did someone climb the wall into the orangery, which was at the end of the monastery's garden?
Right.
Which had a roof that had lots of holes, and you could easily climb on that wall onto the roof and then into the garden.
If it's an orangery with heaps of holes, then it's not going to be very good for keeping the frost off of your orange trees.
No, but the articles didn't say if there was anything in the orangery. The building was called the orangery.
No, I mean, you can tell I'm a gardener because that's the first thing. Oh God, not the citrus. Keep the frost off the citrus.
The police went around the cemetery wall and couldn't find any trace of climbing or footsteps in the wet moss and mud around the wall.
All right. So this is, I'm presuming this is kind of like, you said it was in Toulouse, yeah?
Yes.
So it's kind of like not on its own. It's kind of like as part of the city.
Yes.
Okay, because sometimes monasteries can be out of town.
Yeah, no, this one is in town. Yeah, I don't know exactly where it is in Toulouse, but it is in town. Mm-hmm. You can walk to it from shops in the town, like for example what the girl did the previous day.
Toulouse is quite a sizable town.
It's not huge, and most of it is on one side of the river, so it's not massive.
No, but...
it's walkable.
Yes.
Especially at the time when people were used to walk for hours all the time.
Oh, yes, of course.
The wall was built with a mud-like substance instead of concrete, a bit like our walls, our garden walls. No, that yellow, muddy thing that holds the stones together. Mm-hmm. Same thing, that's what it was. These walls had been colonized by vegetation because they hadn't been maintained, a bit like ours and ivy.
Excuse me, how dare you? I have been cutting back so much ivy.
Look at that ivy over there.
Oh, my garden's perfect.
As the police examined the wall with a magnifying glass, they found the head of grass had been crushed.
Right.
As if someone had walked on it.
Through it, yeah.
A bit further, they found a geranium with all its flowers, petals fallen on the floor, but only one. The others were fine. So it's not like there was a frost that killed all the geraniums. It's one plant that lost all its petals. And a bit further again, a plant had been taken out of the ground. Ripped out of the ground.
So there's been quite a bit of disturbance then?
Yeah, all in a line.
Okay.
And finally, in a cypress tree... that was growing along the wall. There was a bit of rope, recently cut, hanging from one of the branches.
Cypress would be quite good for climbing over to gain access because they're long and thin, but they're sturdy.
Yes,
I mean the ones that are behind our house are, they've taken a lot of battering over the years. Yes. And they're still standing.
Yes. So essentially you have a straight line of damage to the ground and flowers and
so does it look like somebody's been dragging something?
It looks like somebody walked there.
Right.
Not necessarily dragging anything, but walked but in a line
footsteps,
to the
definitely.
Tree. Yes.
Okay.
So the police decided that they knew where and how the body was dumped in the garden at that point. Three doctors were asked to do the autopsy of Cécile Combet, who turned out to be 14. Her wrists showed ligature marks.
Right.
Her head had blood stains. Her face showed signs of a beating. And they also noticed that her skin showed signs of being dragged against the wall. Some petals of the geranium were found on her clothes.
Right.
Bits of the cypress tree were also found in her clothes. So we knew that somebody walked along that wall. And she obviously was... in there somehow, because she also has the same things on her clothes, and her face has obviously been dragged against the wall as well.
It does sound like she wasn't alive when she went in that garden.
No, most likely she was dead already, yes.
Oh, God. I always hate when we do children. It's always so soul darkening, but...
Yes. Her underwear also contained a feather of the kind you find in beds,
mm-hmm.
and a few bits of straw, most likely because the body had been kept in a barn, the police guesses, at
right.
some point for a while.
Uh-huh.
And finally, they reported that she had been raped first.
How could you make it even worse? Oh, great. Okay.
So last question was, when was she killed? It must have happened between the previous morning and the 16th at 5 a.m. because mm-hmm. in the previous morning, she was in the monastery with the monks delivering
right.
books. And at 5 a.m. on the 16th, she was dead and she was found in the cemetery.
Okay.
So they have essentially...
Big timeline. A big window where she was...
A smallish window. It's less than a day. Less than 24 yeah. hours. So it's not huge. The content of the stomach also showed that she had been killed no more than an hour after her lunch the previous day.
Okay.
So that reduces the window to less than 12 hours.
Yeah, that's not bad. For 1849, did you say? 1850? Round about the...
1847.
Okay. Well, that's not bad for that time of...
That's pretty precise, yes.
Time in history, I mean, we're managing to narrow it down that much.
A cop, who had been the first to arrive, went to the monastery to have a look at the garden side of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
There he found bits of rope as well, like in the tree,
okay.
that had been cut around a knot. And nearby he noticed shoe prints on the ground.
Ah.
A bit further along, on the same line again,
mm-hmm.
he noticed marks of a ladder.
Right, okay. That's a real operation to have a ladder, a rope, obviously, to get the body across
yes.
the wall. Wow.
Yes, and the ladder had gone quite deep into the ground, like something very heavy had gone
something
up.
Something almost like two
yes.
bodies had been,
yes.
one alive and one dead.
Yes.
Hmm.
So now they have a better view of what happened because they have the damage to the vegetation and the mud marks on the cemetery side,
mm-hmm.
but they can also see... the same thing happening on the monastery side.
Yeah.
So whoever came from the monastery, used the ladder to go over the wall, then walked along the wall on the cemetery side and dumped the body.
Right.
So now they know exactly how it happened.
It's beginning to feel like an inside job.
It does, yes.
Especially bringing a ladder. Who's going to know necessarily where the monks keep their ladders?
I don't know. I have no idea. Maybe it was obvious from the street. I don't know.
Mm.
The cop asked the father from the monastery who had brought and climbed on the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
He answered that it was probably brothers from the cemetery who, having heard noises on the other side of the wall when the police came, were curious and wanted to see what was happening, so they brought a ladder and climbed on top of the
ladder. Okay, so they were being curtain twitchers.
That's what the guy says, yes.
Like a bunch of gossipy old ladies.
Yes, but the cop is not happy with the answer. He asked a gardener who would never have allowed anybody to kill his plants.
No.
If he had seen who was up the ladder.
Mm.
But he said that he had no idea who would have done that. And he said, if I knew who had done that, I would make sure they would never do it again.
They'd be over the wall with the poor young girl, yes.
Yes. So the gardener is pissed off and he doesn't know who could have climbed up that ladder.
Mm-hmm.
But the official explanation is curtain twitchers.
Yeah.
So the instructing judge at that point decided to issue an arrest warrant for the bookbinder Cecile was working for, because he was the last person to see her.
Mm.
But, weirdly, he hadn't gone to Auch on that day. It's a nearby town from Toulouse. And he also issued an arrest warrant for Marie Roumaniac, who's 40 years old, and another employee of the bookbinder, who had been hired the previous week. Absolutely nobody knows why the judge decided to arrest that woman. He never explained it and nobody ever understood why that other employee would be somehow involved.
Mm.
Nobody knows.
Given it was a woman.
Yes.
Well, that's really weird.
Yes.
Mm.
Nobody knows. On the 17th, Comte, that's the bootbinder, came back from Auch. So the next day. The police was wanting him and arrested him as he crossed the gates in Toulouse, in the Saint-Cyprien gate.
Okay.
Remember, towns at the time had gates and
yes.
walls.
Mm-hmm.
So they were waiting for him. The first thing he asked the cop when they climbed into his cab was, "Do you have any news about Cecil Combet?" The cops replied that they didn't know what he was talking about, and obviously not wanting to give away anything about the inquiry, they let him talk. And the first thing he said after that is, "Oh, in any case, I'm innocent."
Yeah.
Like an innocent person would say.
Yeah, I'm always just telling people I'm innocent, especially when I'm talking to the police.
Especially
it's practically the first thing I say to them.
Yeah, especially when they haven't told you anything yet.
Yeah.
All they've done is sit in your cab with you. And the first thing you tell them is, "Oh, it's not me."
Yeah.
Comte was interrogated the same day by the instructing judge. And the judge explained that he's been suspected of having involved in Cecile's disappearance because she was working for him.
Mm.
That he brought her to the area where, according to Comte himself, dodgy things were happening. Apparently the area around the monastery wasn't a very nice area.
Okay.
And then he left the same day for Auch, which smelled quite badly.
Mm.
And he didn't try to find her in any way. So the judge told him, "Well, for all these reasons, we decided to arrest you and question you."
But
they didn't tell him about the body.
In all fairness, though, he's kind of like her employer. He's not, you know, duty bound to go looking for her.
No. That's true.
It's terrible that she's, you know, that she's missing, but he's not her dad.
No, that's true.
Just playing devil's advocate here, obviously.
Yes. Anyway, they don't tell him that they found a body. They just tell him that she's missing.
Right.
Comte only replied that he was innocent, again,
of
whatever happened to her. But he did notice a man and an old woman that morning that he saw several times in different places as he was going to the cemetery, to the monastery.
Right.
Like they were followed. The judge strongly suspected bullshit. But he didn't have any evidence against Comte at that point.
No.
He sent the cops to Auch to try to trace his itinerary and interviewed people that he met, the cab drivers and everything in that town.
Okay, that's very thorough.
To see, was he really there? What was he doing there? What was happening?
Was he squirrely? Was he acting suspicious?
Yes. He learned that he visited an old employee who was now his own bookbinder.
The bookbinder has a bookbinder. He doesn't bind his own books.
No, he does. But one of his old employees is now working for himself as a bookbinder in Auch.
He's spun off to be his own bookbinder.
Yes. There he mentioned Cecile, apparently, and what happened to her, which is strange, but wasn't a secret, really. But the cops, why would you go to that other town and talk about a missing person? It's just, why? So they're not too sure what's going on.
I mean, he clearly didn't seem to have any specific need to be in this place, in this other town.
Well, that's the thing. What they should have noticed and didn't really seem to notice is that he was so busy in Auch. He went from shop to shop. He inquired about everything from shoes to cab wheels, even though his own cab in Toulouse didn't need new wheels.
Mm.
But he asked about that and how to get good ones and all that around town.
Yeah.
He met lots of people. Some of them apparently nearly randomly just talked to people over there because it wasn't really related to his business. To the cops, it should have been like he was building an alibi.
Mm. He was just wanting to be highly visible and have lots of different eyewitnesses.
Yes. Because that was reported, but the cops don't seem to have noticed.
But the thing is, I mean, you're doing it after the fact.
Yes.
If you'd been there the day before...
Yes,
that's
true.
That would have been good, but I mean, all he's doing is just tiring himself out by, you know, being somewhere else and being visible.
Yes.
Not very savvy.
One thing that the cops noticed is that Comte kept Cecile with him after the book delivery on the 15th, so the day before her death, or the day before she was found.
So this is after they'd been to the monastery?
Yes. Okay. So he kept her with her. But he sent the other employee that came with them back to the workshop.
Is that the new older lady?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
That
does smell.
He didn't need her because all he had at that point is a few empty baskets.
Yeah.
So he didn't need someone to carry them for him. Yeah. It's not like when he went to the monastery where he had books in those baskets. So she would have been more useful in the workshop.
Mm.
Also, when he was about to leave... Over an hour later or so, The doorman at the monastery pointed out that Cecile wasn't around and that she could have gone into the monastery unsupervised, but
right.
Comte didn't seem to care and left. So the cops found that very, very dodgy.
So he basically arrived with her then left without her.
Yes, he arrived with her and the other woman, Mary.
Yeah, yeah.
He sent Mary back home mm-hmm. when the delivery was done, yeah. kept Cecile with him,
uh-huh.
and about an hour later, when he left without her
yeah,
and
no,
didn't seem to care.
The devil, I don't think, could even play advocate with that. That looks very suspicious that he was just happy to trot off without her.
Yeah, that's what the cops think.
Yeah.
Why would you do that?
Oh, it's totally suspicious.
Even before he left for Auch, Comte seemed to try to make sure that he was never alone, a bit like he did in Auch.
Yeah.
He walked for a while after the delivery, and he met someone in the street, a complete stranger, talked to him, and then walked around town with him.
yeah,
and then he went from shop to shop.
That is weird.
Yes. And all the time asking about things that would be remembered, weird things, so that
yeah.
people would remember him.
I have to say, that is not how you build an alibi. Nobody's interested in what you do after the fact.
Yeah, but if the timeline is fuzzy, it might help you, I guess.
I mean, there's just one word that comes to mind, and it's a good Scots word, and the guy's being a bit of a numpty if he thinks that's going to provide
yes.
him with a good alibi.
Yeah. So the police start digging into Comte's past, and they discovered that he had an affair with a young employee of his, Charlotte Thérèse Maître.
Okay, this is giving me the dry heave thinking about this. How young are we talking?
Hold on. She was also his sister-in-law.
Oh, no.
But the police say, it's not related because she was 20 at the time, whereas Cecile was 14.
Okay, yeah. So, there's a big difference, especially at that stage.
Yes. So they decided, that's just his private life. He did dodgy things, but that doesn't make him a murderer of a kid.
Sister-in-law is kind of like, yeah, do you not like your brother?
Yeah, yeah, don't
crap where you eat, you know?
Yes, but it's because the judge was trying really hard not to make him a monster because he didn't want to derail the inquiry into, we found the guilty guy,
yeah.
we need to prove it's him.
Yeah.
He actually wanted to find what had happened.
What was happening.
So he said, it's kind of not nice.
It's kind of skin crawling and he's a bit of an ass, but
it's clearly an ass, but there's a big difference between having an affair with your sister, a 20-year-old sister-in-law, and killing a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah, let's focus on Cecile rather than...
yes, exactly.
His creepy yearnings.
So Comte is questioned again on the 18th.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he denies knowing anything about what happened to Cecile
mm-hmm.
because he was away from town, obviously, because he's trying to muddy the timeline.
Yeah.
And he was arrested when he came back. So he didn't have time to learn anything about what happened to her. That's his explanation.
Mm-hmm.
The judge informed him that she had been raped and killed, and he cried a little. But the account I read didn't seem to think that it was really crying.
Oh, is it one of these making the crying faces with no tears? Crocodile tears.
When then asked if he had seen someone at the entrance of the monastery
mm-hmm.
when he went with Cecile, he surprisingly answered that he saw brothers Léotard and Jubrien, two monks,
mm-hmm.
who were talking together at the door. And at that point of the inquiry, the police hadn't heard of these characters yet. So they're half thinking, is he just throwing names?
Mm.
So they decide to have a confrontation between him and the two monks.
Right.
That's what they used to do at the time.
Oh my God, so you would just have you kind of like facing off against...
Yeah, all in the same room and ask for an explanation.
So you need lots of coppers in the room looking at all the faces for the reactions.
Yeah. So at first the two monks said that they didn't think that they were at the door when Comte arrived.
Mm.
They certainly didn't remember that.
Right.
They didn't remember seeing him at all on that day, but it was possible they forgot. But once Comte started telling other parts of the story, for example, how Léotard would have given him a wallet to repair and told him it wasn't urgent and he could send the wee girl to deliver it back when it's finished,
okay.
the monk started to object at that point.
Yeah, and that's making me sound a bit creepy, dude.
Yeah, exactly. And they're saying, oh, we didn't even know that girl. We didn't know she existed. So why are you trying to pin it on us? So at that point, they're starting to say, no, that's all bullshit. We never saw that guy. We never saw the girl. Yeah. It's not us.
They were being accommodating, but, you know, up to a certain point.
Yes.
Yeah, stop trying to throw us under the cart. Yeah.
Yeah. On the 23rd, another confrontation with the monks is organized by the judge. Mm. And this time, they're less hesitant. And both object to having been at the door on that day between 8 and 10 a.m.
Now their memories have suddenly been firmed up and they're not going to give the guy the benefit of the doubt because they didn't know he was going to try and stitch them up.
It sounds a bit like that, yes. Kant continued to swear that he had met the two monks at the door, so he said, no, they're lying, I met them at the door. He wasn't sure whether he had seen them later on in the morning, so he thought, maybe I'm confusing a little bit the timeline here, maybe I saw them later.
Oh, there's nothing better than changing your story.
Yes, because he said, I remember arriving at the monastery, but after that I moved a lot in the monastery, so I'm not too sure where I was when, so maybe I met them at some other point, I'm not entirely sure, it's a bit foggy in my head.
Okay, backpedaling much?
A little bit, yes. So the judge decided to arrest the two monks just in case.
Arrest everyone!
Pretty much. That seems to be an easy answer to everything, according to the judge.
I mean, that's now, what, 4 people is arrested?
Yes. And no proof of anything about any of them. The judge and the police decided to investigate the monastery a bit more to see if it was likely that Cici would have disappeared without anybody noticing her in the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
The judge went to the monastery at the same time Cecile did, on the same day. He knocked at the door. And a monk came to open the door and asked what he wanted, and he said that he just wanted to have a look around, and he went in. He walked around the cemetery, he walked around the monastery, without seeing anyone. He went to the garden, the stables, from corridor to corridor, nobody.
See no one, okay.
At the time, the monks had work to do, because they have a schedule every day. And on that day, I think it was a Thursday or Wednesday or Thursday, all their morning was some kind of work that they did every week. So they were all busy away from the corridors and the garden. So he thought, she could have disappeared in there and nobody would have seen her.
Mm.
So it wasn't impossible that she was abducted in the monastery by...
Another person,
a monk or maybe not a monk. And absolutely nobody would know about it because nobody was around. What bothers the judge is, it's one thing to get lost in the monastery without being noticed.
Mm.
It's another thing to rape and kill a girl and not be heard.
Mm.
The monks' bedrooms were part of a large complex of shared bedrooms. The rule was that none of them would sleep on their own. So there would always be several people per room.
Mm-hmm.
Some rooms had 2, some had 5-6 people in the same bedroom.
Yeah, I mean, monasteries aren't known for their deluxe accommodation.
Yes, but it's also to keep an eye on each other. Because that's you need to keep an eye on monks so that they don't do anything they shouldn't do.
Really?
Yeah. Still happens, I think. It's just the way it is. They're always together, always looking at each other, always keeping an eye on things. I remember at the time, monks were often people who tried to leave their life behind them. So criminals and people with no money who had no other way to get food and whatever. And they would just decide, I'll be a monk then. And they are not necessarily good people. So one of the way they make sure that nothing happens is there's always several monks at anywhere they go. They never go anywhere on their own.
It's not something I've ever contemplated, obviously.
Yes.
Well, I couldn't be a monk anyway.
The judge starts thinking, how is it possible that there would be shared rooms and she would have been killed either late afternoon or during the night and nobody would know anything? It's just not possible. So he decides that it couldn't have happened in the bedrooms.
Right, even though she had a feather.
Exactly. So there's something that doesn't work here. But he decided it's just not possible. It can't have happened in the bedrooms. He discovered, however, a room above the stables.
Right.
And that room was not officially a bedroom, but it matches all the evidence. There was a straw mattress.
Okay.
Which has feathers that were sticking out that matched the ones that were found on Cecile.
And presumably, as it's a stable, they would have had hay in.
Exactly. There was hay all over the place.
Explain why she had hay on the bottom of her shoes.
It was isolated because it wasn't part of the main building. It was the stables.
Yeah.
So now he's thinking, that could have happened here.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely nobody would have heard anything.
Yeah.
So who has access to that room?
If only Mr. Ed had been staying there, they could have asked him.
Yes. So he learns that there's a monk who looks after rabbits below the room.
Okay.
And he also has keys for the whole monastery. And that monk is Brother Leotard.
Ooh.
Heard that name before.
Mm.
It would have been very easy for him to move unnoticed around the monastery because he had all the keys. So easy. Could it in fact be a monk that killed Cecile?
Well, as you say, I mean, if all monks aren't just men of the cloth, then yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
So the judge decided that if it is Leotard, if it is one of the monks, he would need to prove that he knew about Cecile. Because so far they have denied knowing she existed.
Yeah.
So he rebuilt the monk's route the day Cecile was found.
Mm-hmm.
And Leotard went into town after the body was found to an ironmonger, to a hat shop, including also Comte's workshop. He met with a candy maker as well, where apparently he was buying candy on a regular basis. And there he talked about what happened to the monastery. He mentioned how they had discovered a girl, Cecile, who had been killed in the cemetery, that she was working for Comte, and how his past life, especially what happened with Charlotte Thérèse, the sister-in-law, was so horrible. If they had known, they would never have hired him. And that made the judge tick a little bit.
Yeah.
Why would you go and talk about that to a candy maker?
Yeah.
That is kind of weird. What? And also, according to the shop, the candy maker, he said he insisted really heavily on the story about the sister-in-law. Why would he talk so much about it? And now the cop is thinking, is he also trying to create an alibi? Is everybody trying to create an alibi?
Everybody's looking super suspicious now.
Yes. Also, the only person who would have known that Cecile had been raped is the murderer, because nobody else knew at that point, apart from the doctors who did the autopsy and the cops. So the fact that he mentioned that also makes him think, he knows way too much.
Well, I don't like this. We've got two good suspects.
Yes. Also, he talked about the relationship between Comte and his sister-in-law as a rape as well, to make everything kind of sound the same.
Yeah, to try and paint him out as worse as possible.
Yes. So really the cop is now thinking, oh, that dude is really dodgy, but now I have two murderers.
Mm-hmm.
When he was interrogated, Leotard, of course, denies that he had anything to do with anything, or even knew about Cecile or anything like that, obviously. Then he denied having known about Comte's life, even though he apparently discussed it with the candy maker.
I mean, and not only knowing about, you know, what kind of personality your bookbinder has, but knowing about his sexual dalliances, that's kind of that's kind of weird. And discussing it with people.
Yeah, exactly. It is really weird. Then he says that he went to the candy maker twice, on the 16th and on the 19th. And maybe it was on the 19th that he talked about Cecile's murder and the candy maker is confused. Because that would be several days later at that point. So he could have known all that information by then.
Okay.
But it's kind of weird that he knew it on the 16th, if it happened on the 16th.
Yeah.
Not so much on the 19th. So that's his explanation. The candy maker must be confused. And I talked about it on like several days later. And at that point, I had heard everything like everybody else.
Oh, when you start adding in witnesses into criminal cases, it just really makes it so messy.
But the candy maker objected to that. And he agreed that, yes, The notepad came on the 19th.
Yeah.
He even remembered exactly what candy he bought from him on that day.
Mm-hmm.
But on that day, Lyotard had only mentioned Comte had been arrested. He was absolutely certain that the discussion about Cecile had taken place on the 16th.
All right, okay.
And one of his employees who had overheard the conversation also confirmed it was on the 16th.
Mm-hmm. All right, okay, so you've got a second witness backing him up.
Yes. So the judge knows that he has enough to suspect Lyotard,
mm-hmm.
but not enough to have him found guilty at trial.
Yeah. But I mean, he's already arrested him anyway, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's arrested.
Yeah.
But let go at that point.
Okay, right.
He was arrested on the 16th or 17th, but then there was nothing, so he let him go. And he will arrest him again, but not yet, because he gets lucky. In the laundry in the monastery, a shirt number 562, because they all have a number on them.
Okay.
Is found with lots of stains, especially on the sleeves, which is strange, because
mm-hmm.
they're monks. They do have no reason to have stained sleeves.
Yeah.
So the judge has it examined,
mm-hmm.
and it turns out to be blood, sperm, and fecal matter.
Oh.
And the fecal matter contains seeds from figs.
Okay.
Tiny.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that the doctors had found during the autopsy and had reported to police is that Cecile had pooped herself when she was attacked.
Oh.
There was fecal matter on her underwear. And in there, they found eight seeds of fig. She had been given those figs as a reward the previous day and had been chomping on them since then.
I love figs.
Yes. It could be a coincidence. So the judge orders to get figs from all the shops in the area and compares the seeds. And none of them matches, except the ones on the shirt.
Okay.
So at that point, he's pretty sure that the shirt was involved in what happened.
And who does it belong to?
Well, that's where it becomes a bit complicated, because the monks change their clothes every Saturday, only once a week.
They must smell beautiful.
Yeah, apparently that was normal at the time.
Oh, yes, of course.
So who had been wearing shirt 562? Unfortunately, it could have been anyone.
Oh, crap.
The monks didn't own clothes. So they were all the same size.
Uh-huh.
They were all cut and made exactly the same way.
Of course, of course.
It was all clones of the same shirt.
Mm. And but it kind of like... would indicate the bookbinder had nothing to do with...
By that point, possibly yes. The shirts are assigned randomly every week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's only one monk, Brother Ledor, who has two shirts that are his, because apparently he's a man mountain, and it doesn't fit in a normal shirt. He's the only one that has his own shirts.
So he's like, what's that, Andre the Giant?
Yes, essentially he's Andre the Giant and therefore he has his own shirt. Okay. Everybody else, mm-hmm. every other monk,
right.
has a random shirt assigned to them every Saturday. Normally the numbered shirts belong to the novices.
Mm-hmm.
So the novices are not monks yet. They're like training to become monks.
Yeah.
But it's not uncommon for a novice to become a monk and take his clothes with him on that day.
Okay.
So they end up in the monk's laundry.
Mm-hmm.
So really the fact that it was a novice shirt doesn't really mean anything.
No.
If it had been impossible for the shirts to be mixed, yes, but no. There's instances of shirts going from one to the other and monk shirts ending up in the novice's laundry. So that doesn't really help him.
You thought that was the kind of like the cast iron hurrah moment, but no.
Yes, the police were really excited at that point, but no. However, all the monks were interviewed and all confirmed that they had changed their shirt on that Saturday after the murder, except Lyotard, who said that he had kept his shirt from the previous week because it fitted him better than the one that was put on his bed on that day. And the monk responsible for the laundry said, no, they're all the same. That makes no sense.
Yeah, that smells.
All the shirts are exactly the same.
Yeah, that smells almost as bad as his shirt that he's been wearing for a week.
Yes, he was arguing that the wrists were not fitting him well or something, so he preferred the shirt he had on.
What, did he have fat wrists?
Yes, but the other shirts would have been the same.
Yeah, of course they would have been the same.
So when he's asked to explain what he had done with the new shirt that he didn't wear, he said he just returned it. And the monk in charge of the crows said, no, no, no shirt was returned to me. So that story is kind of dodgy at that point, but the cops don't know what is dodgy about the story. One of them is lying.
Yeah.
They don't know which yet. What the judge wonders is if Leotard could have done a switcheroo.
Yep.
He was in charge of procuring wine for the monastery.
Mm-hmm.
The room where the wine is stored is the one next to the laundry. That these clothes must have smell of wine. And we know that Leotard had a key for everything.
Oh, yes.
So could he have gone into the wine room, as he would do regularly, and then went into the laundry room, changed shirt.
And swapped out, yeah.
And then he had a clean shirt and no blood or nothing on his shirt.
That sounds plausible.
Plausible, but hard to prove.
Yeah.
One thing it did is, all this, is move the spotlight away from Comte, though. Because the more the police are looking into Leotard, the more they think, Comte has nothing to do with this. He's a nasty guy, but there's nothing on him. He didn't have opportunity, he didn't have any motives, he had absolutely nothing.
No. He just behaves in a hugely suspicious manner after...
And he can't have switched shirts at the monastery.
No.
That would have been so weird and obvious. And why would he have worn a monk shirt in the first place anyway?
Yeah.
He would have had to go into the laundry room twice.
I mean, why would he specifically put one on, you know, do those absolutely terrible things to that poor young girl and then take his shirt back off and then just to frame a monk?
And that's just stupid. He would have had to first go in, get a monk shirt, kill Cecile, then go back in again and swap shirts. Just that makes no sense.
Yeah, logistically, no.
No.
It's definitely an inside job, isn't it?
Yes. But the monks band together, of course, because that's what the church does.
Mm.
So they try to incriminate Comte anyway.
Mm.
They testified that it had been possible for Cecile to leave the monastery without being noticed. That the cops know that because they tried it.
Yeah.
In fact, 3 months said that they were at the doorway on that day.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it would have been possible for her to disappear in the monastery. But they saw her leave
on her own. That's new.
So they agreed it would have been possible for her to disappear in the monastery, but they saw her leave, so it's not what happened.
Yeah, that's the first time they're saying this, though.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
They also brought to the police witnesses, friends of Cecile, who reported that she told them that she had been abused by Comte, and she confessed lots of things to do with Comte to them. And long story short, because it goes on for quite a while, because they obviously have very detailed stories because they want them to be believable, it was all fake and all a lie. The judge did his job well.
Okay.
And he managed to untangle the web of lies from the monks and Cecile's friends and proved that they weren't possible.
Mm-hmm.
They can't have happened the way it's been described.
Okay. Well, that's kind of like made it a bit better, I guess.
Yes. So as a result, Leotard is sent to trial.
Okay.
The police said, yeah, that was him. We're now going to try him.
Was nothing ever done of the footprints that they found?
No.
No.
Well, they have footprints and that's pretty much it. What else can they do about it? At the time, there was no forensics.
Well, it would have established if there'd been size of feet or something, size of shoes.
No.
Okay. I have to really take my 21st century brain out when I'm listening to these older cases.
Yes. So the trial starts on the 7th of February 1848 in Toulouse.
Mm-hmm.
To accommodate the press, platforms are built in the tribunal room above the jury and above the accused benches.
God.
400 people are crammed into the room.
Mm.
And the whole of Toulouse wants to know what's happening.
Yeah.
Brother Leotard attends wearing his monk outfit.
Of course he does, yes.
As if trying to say that it's not him that's on trial, it's the church.
You're judging Jesus.
Yes. And in 1848, there's an anti-religion sentiment starting to grow.
Mm-hmm.
So
bit
he's
dead.
Trying to kind of blame the country for being arrested because he's now a scapegoat and all that. He denies everything, still, of course, including having known Cecile at all. The crowd doesn't believe it at all. It's like theatre, so the crowd reacts to what people say in the tribunal. When questioned, he often doesn't remember. He doesn't remember having been to the bookbinder's workshop on the 15th. He doesn't remember having seen Cecil there. He doesn't remember having ordered modification to a wallet and a notebook. He doesn't remember anything. That's his defense.
Isn't it often the way that people who are on trial suffer from amnesia?
Yeah.
It's weird that.
Yeah. After being warned by the judge that his story had changed too much, mm-hmm. and that he needs to tell the truth, he blames the instructing judge and the prosecutor that he says were treating him worse than you treat a slave.
Yeah, I don't think so.
They were beating him and intimidating him, as far as he says.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really why his story changed a little bit, because with all that, I kind of got confused a little bit. The judge doesn't buy it.
So he has that amnesia beaten into him?
Pretty much, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. During the trial, fake witnesses are found out.
Okay.
Again, the judge, not the instructing judge, but the trial judge also does his job properly.
Mm-hmm.
He really, really tries to find what's happening. And I read the transcript of the tribunal, which is quite long because it lasts, remember, a week or something. He asks a lot of questions that overlap. And you can see where the stories kind of stop working in different cases.
Mm-hmm.
So he finds all the witnesses that were just lying, essentially. And he gets them arrested.
Even more people arrested.
Yes. The monks retract their testimonies because now they're starting to see that being in the church is not going to help them and they're now risking prison.
Mm.
So suddenly they say, no, we were confused. So he's now losing his alibi.
Okay.
In the middle of the trial in Paris.
Paris?
Yes. So now things are happening. On the 22nd and 23rd of February, the revolution starts. 1848.
Ah, yes. That's going to throw a spanner in
What started it was that there was a movement against the monarchy and that was meeting regularly and they wanted to turn the monarchy into a constitutional monarchy like in the UK today.
Yep.
But Louis Philippe, the king at the time, wasn't interested. Duh.
Mm.
And he started banning those groups and those gatherings. And in particular, there was one that was supposed to meet at the Arc de Triomphe on that day. So they had organized a massive banquet at the Arc de Triomphe. And it was banned. And that's what started the rioting. It takes a long time for the news to reach Toulouse.
Yeah,
no phones,
I can imagine it.
And no internet. But eventually the news arrives. And the king has been overthrown. France is a republic again.
Is this Napoleon III's?
Nope, that's Third Republic.
I can never get on these bloody republics.
No, let me see. No, that's Second Republic. Second Republic.
Yeah, that would be right. It would be the Second Republic, yes.
Yes, because it was Republic, Napoleon Monarchy, and then Republic, and then Second Empire, and then Republic again. Yes.
So we're not too far away from Napoleon III.
Well, we're 30 years earlier, a bit less than 20 years earlier. But the result of that is the judge is no longer the king's judge. The prosecutor is no longer the king's prosecutor.
Crap.
So the trial collapses.
Oh, no, that's not good because those two judges were good.
Yes. But they are no longer technically employed by the country, so they can't prosecute the guy.
Bloody constitutional changes.
Yes. So the trial is delayed until the 16th of March to try to sort things out.
Mm-hmm.
When they reconvene on the 16th of March, the judge is the same judge.
Oh,
he's been reappointed.
Well, that's good.
The prosecutor, I think, is different. The judge decides that everything's been said already.
Right.
Let's just move on. And he moves on straight to the sentencing. Léotard's lawyer complains and objects, obviously, because the new jury hasn't heard anything so far. Essentially, they turn up one day and they say, you're going to sentence that dude.
That's a bit... But presumably, they would have known who he was. And
By that point, it's months later. Surely, the whole of Toulouse would have
surely
heard
the papers
thing.
Would have been full of...
This is very dodgy, though, but that's the way the judge decided to do it.
Okay.
And the lawyer quits because he said, I can't do my job.
I can see what he's saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Leo Dad no longer has a lawyer at that point.
Oh, crap.
Doesn't stop the judge. Let's continue.
Oh, no.
The only problem is for the monks is we're now in a republic and therefore the king is no longer protecting the church.
Yes.
And the monks are now realizing that they are risking even more than just prison. Leotard sees that his monk outfit is not going to cut the mustard.
Oh, he's now in his civvies, is he?
I wondered that and I didn't see a description of what he was wearing. I don't know. But yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Because at that point, you don't want to be a monk.
Hey, I'm one of you, peeps.
Yeah. So he gets a new lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
They do their closing arguments. The jury goes away and deliberates for an hour and a half.
Oh, no.
And they found him guilty on all counts.
Of course they did.
He's sent to life in prison in a penal colony in Toulon. So it doesn't go very far.
No, lucky.
But there he gets sick very quickly. And after 3 days of his sentence, he dies at 37.
So he didn't even have time for appeal?
No. He essentially arrived there and died.
Oh, no, I have mixed feelings about this now. Carry on.
There is an epilogue to the story. That's the end of the story.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's an epilogue because people have been very unhappy about the way the trial went.
Yeah.
Because of lack of lawyers and juries not hearing anything and resolution in the middle and all that. So for many years, there's been a movement to rehabilitate or retry the monk, but the state has always refused. In the 1870s, there's a woman who's found decapitated in Toulouse, and the murderer is an ex-monk. So people are saying, huh, could it be linked? And in fact, it turns out that the monk who did it was at the monastery when Cécile was killed.
Oh, no.
It's discovered that he's been moved from the monastery to somewhere in the center of France in the middle of nowhere just after the murder happened.
Much like the way
the church has a bad habit of moving
people
around when they have done something bad.
Absolutely appalling.
And it really, really smells that's what could have happened there.
So this guy,
Leotard,
might have been innocent then.
Yes, it sounds like to these people, it sounds like the monastery knew what had happened, knew that that monk was in fact the murderer, moved him away, and let Leotard take the fall. They were probably hoping he would get away with it because they assumed that the police couldn't prove that Leotard did it because he didn't do it. It was the other monk, but somehow the cops managed to make the evidence stick to Leotard, and he had a dodgy story. They managed to make it stick, and he was convicted of the murder when maybe he wasn't the murderer.
Yeah.
But we don't know, because that's it. That's the end of the story. There's not going to be another trial, so we have no idea.
Yeah.
But it looks like it's possible that, in fact, he wasn't the murderer, and it was another monk.
Well, I know. I'm sure if Cadfael had been part of the monastery, it would have been solved. But, you know, life isn't Cadfael.